This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted to welcome to the Radio Cafe Paula Poundstone. She's a comedian. She's a regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She was named to Comedy Central list of 100 greatest stand-up comedians of all time. And she will be at the Lenzic Center for Performing Arts on Thursday, February 4th at 7:30. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you very much. When I think cafe, I think butter patties.
we have those there. We do in abundance. We wish you were here in person.
Oh my gosh, I wish I was too. Then, gosh, I love butter. I don't even like bread that much. I eat the bread just to get the butter to my mouth politely.
You know, I remember once taking a piece of butter. I thought it was cheese, and just eating it whole, and it was really good.
Yeah, yeah. When I was 4 years old, my parents gave me a pound of butter for my birthday.
How long did it take you to eat it?
Not that long. I'm sure I'm paying the price for it now, but not that long. Well, I'm very excited to come to Santa Fe.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having you here. And I think a lot of people know your work from, you know, from both from comedy, from HBO, from comedy clubs, from NPR. And I wanted to ask you how you got into comedy in the first place. Is this something you were doing since you were a kid?
I started when I was 19 years old. I was in Boston in 1979. I started doing open mic nights, which is kind of the, kind of the university of stand-up comedy. Started doing open mic nights in Boston, and then I took a Greyhound bus around the country to see what clubs were like in different cities. Ended up in San Francisco for a while, and then I don't know. At some point, I moved down here to Los Angeles.
Now, what were clubs like around the country? I mean, what was it like to be a young touring comedian?
It was exciting and fun and a little bit gnarly. the clubs, I don't know, I think easier to do when you're young, probably, where it didn't matter where I slept. You know, one of the fun things about that period of time was, especially because when you got hired, generally speaking, the way that the clubs worked was there was an MC, a middle act, and a headliner. And then a lot of cities had open mic nights, which is kind of the developmental pipeline for the stand-up comics that they would then hire locally. So you got to know all the guys, that were your... we always refer to it as our graduating class, you know.
Right.
You not only got to know them, but a lot of times you stayed in the same, condo with them for a week. And so that part was really fun. There was a certain camaraderie there that was nice. Now I work alone. Honestly, my audience is too great to share with any other acts. So it's selfishly I work alone. I do about 2 hours in a theater. And in this particular occasion, it'll be the Lenzic Performing Arts Center. And, so I don't hang out with anybody anymore other than the audience.
I've always wondered what it's like to memorize that much material. To what extent you're improvising, to what extent you are like a stage actor who's really learned their lines. Because, I mean, it's an incredible energy expenditure, and it's also like an incredible memorization task.
Well, I'm not a great memorizer. My kids wear name tags. I just, I'm not good at that. And it's part of the reason I work the way that I do, which is when I started out doing open mic nights, one of the premise of an open mic night is that anybody who wants to can go up and do 5 minutes. Well, especially back then, there were so many people wanting to go up and do their 5 minutes that, sometimes there'd be 30 people a night. And so if you went over that 5 minutes, people got awfully pissed about it.
Yeah.
And so I would memorize the 5 minutes that I planned to do, and invariably I would get nervous and forget. And then I would get on stage and have no idea where I was time-wise. which would only make me more nervous because, you know, all the other comics were sharpening their knives in the back if you went over. And so eventually I would end up being forced, because I couldn't remember what I was going to say. I would be forced to work the crowd. I'd be forced to say, you know, so, you know, sir, where are you from? What do you do for a living? And I don't remember on what day I realized that that was where really the heart of the night was. That was where the fun part was, the part where you didn't know what somebody was going to say, and you didn't know what you were going to say. And so probably now, and I've been at this for 37 years, so probably now, on a good night, and I like to think some are, on a good night, probably about a third of the show has never been said before and will never be said again. It was just, you know, just us for that night. It really developed because I don't memorize very well.
Yeah, I saw one, I watched about 7 million of your YouTubes the other night, and one of them was you were up on stage kind of bantering with Bill and Hillary Clinton. What was that like?
It was fun and exciting, and it was obviously a few years back when he was president and she was first lady, and it was at the Ford Theater in D.C. It was at a night they used to call it the gala for the president. I don't even know if they still air it anymore. But, the premise of it was, a night of entertainment for the president and their partner. And, they were in the front row, and I really felt it my duty to make sure that they had a good time because, I don't care who you elect for president. Well, I do care, but no matter who you elect for president, it's a lousy job. And I really felt like I wanted them to be able to relax on that night. So it was fun and exciting, and I considered it a personal responsibility. And by the way, I think they did have a good time.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see the Onion headline the day after Obama was elected? It said, "Black man gets worst job in the country."
Yeah, boy, is that right. And, they always show those pictures of when the president first took office, and then they show him, like, after he's been in office for a while and how time-ravaged they are.
Yeah.
Obama looks like those meth photos that they show, the person before and after. It really does just chew you up and spit you out, I assume.
Not a job for most of us, definitely.
No. Sadly, not a job for most of the people running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this group, I mean, that's comedy gold.
It is. It's a little comedy gift basket for performers almost every day. I feel, though, that I'm a citizen first and a stand-up comic second, and therefore I would be happy to make up jokes without such easy fodder there. I would be a lot happier with a less funny list of candidates.
I remember when Obama, it was in 2008 during the Obama, the run-up, the campaign for the election, which Obama was first elected, and somebody asked Jon Stewart, "What are you going to do if Obama's elected? You won't have the same kind of comedy fodder that you had with George Bush." And he gave a really kind of scathing response, which was something like what you just said. "I'm a citizen first. This is not about me having fodder. This is about having a country that is good to its citizens."
Yeah, we'll make fun of another country if we have to. That's fine with me. I think Russia provides plenty. We could be the healthy, good example. That would be fine with me.
And there will still be politicians aplenty for you to talk about.
Yeah, I do think it's a production line that we'll never stop giving. I hope I don't have to write my jokes from Canada.
Your word in dog's ear. Now, do you ever have to take time off in order to kind of recharge your batteries and sort of renew your comedy? I would think it would be a lot of pressure to be funny all the time. Or maybe the flow is just always there. What's that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I do take time off occasionally to be with my family. But no, it's not because I needed time away from work. I have the opposite of what of what a lot of people have, which is my work recharges me. You know, nature gave us this really cool thing that I don't know how many other species got away with this, which is a sense of humor, which is the most healing thing in the world. One of the fun parts of what I do is, you know, I talk mostly about raising a house full of kids and animals and trying to pay attention to the news well enough to cast a halfway decent vote, which we all know is not an easy trick at all. And, you know, the things that feel like, you know, really difficult struggles at home, well, I go tell those on stage, and all of a sudden, you know, the room is filled with that, what's the word for it, that recognition laughter, you know? And one of the things about parenting is it's incredibly lonely. You always feel in the soup, and you always feel like, oh, my gosh, I must be the only one. And you know what? 99.9% of the time, you're not remotely the only one. It's just, it's not, you know, people on the street, when you say, well, how's it going, right? Or when you look at their goofy, stupid Facebooks, and everybody posts these pictures like it's all, you know, perfection. And I think that they actually have studies that indicate that Facebook depresses people for just that reason, because they feel more and more alien. Well, let me tell you something. You come to my show, you're not alien. You know, I talk about this, you know, the slings and arrows of just daily life. And there's something just joyous about being able to talk to people about it and laugh about it. And so it's the opposite for me. I go to work to get renewed. You know, I come home and spin backwards like a balloon around the room, and I'm totally deflated, and then I go to work.
It's wonderful to have a profession that renews you like that. One of the things that I noticed, I mean, I love watching comedy, and a lot of comedians use their romantic life and dating and failed love and all that kind of stuff as material, and you've said quite explicitly that none of that stuff really interests you.
Well, my act is largely autobiographical, and I neither date nor have sex, and therefore it doesn't come up a lot. If I did, I'm sure I would talk about it all the time. But I have to say that I'm really glad that I don't. It just seems like such an exhausting waste of time, and with everything there is to do, I just can't even imagine doing online goofy, filling out some form to match up with. It just sounds awful to me. And then ultimately, you have to sit at a table with somebody you don't know at one time or another and go like, oh, you like music? I like music. It just sounds awful to me. I'm happy for the rest of you. Don't get me wrong.
Well, I mean, from my own personal perspective, it is awful. And I was watching your comedy and thinking, and you're sort of confirming what I was wondering, which was that there's a kind of freedom in not having to worry about that stuff. I mean, so many people are obsessed with that particular topic to the exclusion of having actual substantive interests. And so you're kind of free.
Well, I mean, I can't claim to have great substantive interests, but you know, I raised my kids not allowed to watch television, and I wish I could tell you that the result of that was that they were all really, you know, deep readers. You know, I'm not sure that necessarily because you close off one avenue, you know, another becomes quite fertile. I'm not sure that happens. But anyways, I do mostly talk about other things. And sometimes I do feel a little alien because all of that is not a big, you know, is not a part of my life. But I'll live with it.
Now, you raised your kids not watching TV. What do they actually do when they're home, when they're not in school?
Well, I mean, we watch movies on non-school nights, you know, always did. So it's not like we've never looked at a screen. I just thought television in particular is just so horrendous. Even if you find something that's good on it, and there are good things, in my opinion, it's just a matter of opinion, but there are good things on it. It's just that what you have to flip through to find it is such, you know, such dreck that I'm not sure it's worth the journey. I don't know. They did sports. We have a house full of cats and dogs, and so we take care of them, enjoy them, pet them. We played games here and there. Honestly, when I was growing up, I remember these long, lazy afternoons, and My kids never had that, and I don't know what happened. Somehow the clock changed because we were always running out of time as I was raising my kids. You know, we were always like, okay, we got to get to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, and I have no idea why. I don't know that they were involved in that much more than I ever was. A couple of them played instruments, and I guess, come to think of it, I didn't play an instrument growing up, and that takes, you know, a fair amount of time, and I don't know. We sometimes made little films. Sometimes we made little radio, just pretend, radio plays, and then we watched them and listened to them and got hours and hours of laughter out of it. I don't know. We just did stuff. I think we argued a lot too. That fills a lot of time.
Yeah, that is a use of time. Yeah, if you figure out that I feel the same way that you do. If you figure out why it is that it felt like we had so much more time in the 70s and 80s than we do now, please let us know, because I don't think the day is any shorter than 24 hours, but it sure feels that way.
Oh, it really does, doesn't it? And I wish we could all just agree to go to a 36-hour day.
Well, I was actually thinking about the 10-day week where you work for 5 days and have 5 days off.
Oh, no, then you just get out of your rhythm. I'm not sure that would help me. Yeah, but the 36, you know, my fear, see, I've always thought, well, what if we had a 36-hour day, because then I would get to sleep more, but then I'll bet you what would happen is that there would just be some other, you know, I'd have to sift the litter boxes 6 times a day instead of 4. It would probably just get crowded with work. Hey, do I hear noise in the cafe?
Yes, we are in the cafe and people are moving chairs.
Yeah, or did you turn around and, like, shush them?
No, you know, this is the slings and arrows of sitting in the corner of a cafe.
Yeah, no, I love the, I'm sorry I can't actually be in the cafe with you. So here you are with the radio cafe, and it would make sense for me to be there, but instead you're one of those people in a restaurant talking on their phone.
It's true, but I'm so completely surrounded by audio equipment that people are kind of nice about it.
Oh, I'm going to have to bring in some fake audio equipment the next time I do that.
Right. People will think you're doing a radio show.
Yeah. I'll just bring, like, props, a set.
So we're talking to Paula Poundstone, and she will be at the Lensic Center for Performing Arts on the 4th of February. That's a Thursday at 7:30 in the evening. Now, are you going to collect a little bit of material about our fine town to talk about when you're on stage, do you think?
I never study up. I generally, you know, the audience members tell me stuff. Sometimes just the person who picks me up at the airport and drives me into the town is enough. Generally speaking, just stuff comes out while you talk to audience members. You know, they'll tell you what they do for a living, and sometimes they cite a business that sparks some interest in the room or some opinion in the room, or, you know, there's always somebody who lives in the town that is the whipping boy to the town that you're in.
Right.
Yeah, you know, so I never really study up. I've been to Santa Fe a number of times. It's a really beautiful place. I do look forward to going there. I've been there in December the last couple of years before Christmas, and it is spectacular at that time. But, yeah, you know, I'll come. I'll make some turquoise jokes. It'll be good.
Well, we look forward to having you, Paula Poundstone, regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's on Comedy Central's list of 100 greatest stand-up comics of all time. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. It was great talking with you.
Great talking with you.
Can I have some more butter?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.